This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 291, and we are building a perfect horror movie. We're going to have a movie and TV discussion. We're going to talk about upcoming releases, and we're going to spoil free reviews of Wheelman, The Archer, and The Snowman, and I think 1922, if I'm not mistaken.
It's on the list.
Sweet. Be sure to get The Hoe on the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts. Reviews are definitely appreciated. Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host. Joining me today are my fellow hoes, John Davenport.
Hey, so apparently when Scott's not here, I don't know when to shut up.
This is true. This is true. Scott Clark will not be here this week, but we are joined by a lovely guest, Heather Drain of MondoHeather.com. Hello, Heather.
Well, hello. Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thanks for coming. And one more time, I know you already did this to John, but can you explain to the audience? I should have probably done it on the show, but can you explain real quick to the audience what MondoHeather.com is?
Absolutely. Mondo Heather and basically anything nonfiction that I do in general is all about celebrating what I call fringe culture, which is basically filmmakers, actors, musicians, and artists whose work are kind of, you know, on the outside of the norm. You know, people who, you know, definitely try to do things kind of a different way and have a very unique vision. And that's everything from art house to grindhouse, from punk to 60s exotica music, and just everything in between. That's basically the Reader's Digest version of what I do.
And you've got a book coming out, right? It's almost done?
The book is actually done. It is currently being proofed. I've been blessed enough to get to work with the great John Skip, which John, for anybody who doesn't know, John was one of the godfathers of the whole splatterpunk literature movement. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s, along with writers like Clive Barker and his partner and John's partner at the time, Craig Spector. John's also gotten into film. He's a screenwriter and director, musician, overall just all around cool guy. And me and him started working together on the Bizarro Film Encyclopedia. This is we've got the first volume done. It's currently being edited and proofed as I speak. And we are aiming to have it out early 2018. And this book is basically the grooviest compendium of all of your, like, weird film needs. So if you're into weird cult cinema, you'll love it. And if you're not, but curious, then it'll be an absolutely great starting point to kind of get you into the world of Bizarro film.
Do you have a release date then for that?
We're looking like, I think, January, February of 2018.
Sweet.
So that's what we're aiming. But of course, I'll update my website as well as, you know, any and all social medias that I'm on. So stay tuned.
That's cool. You're going to come back, I hope, because I want to have a whole like cult cinema discussion, but I want to wait until closer to your book comes out. So then it could be timed to that.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
That's what I'm all about. Helping everybody but John.
Right.
Oh,
it's okay.
John's so lovely though. Why are you treating him like that?
He has it coming. Speaking of people that have it coming, Magnum P.I. apparently has a reboot coming again, yet again. This is the second time they tried to reboot this thing in the last couple of years. The first time I actually was into it. They were going to redo it like Magnum's daughter was going to take over. And apparently now they're just going to redo it completely. Do you guys, are you fans of Magnum P.I.? Do you want to see it rebooted? Or is it just another, let's just stop this train and get off?
I'm very much on the let's just stop this train and get off, because I know I've mentioned this before, but Tom Selleck is my Hasselhoff. So I don't want anybody else to be
is that good?
In that place.
I don't know what that means.
Well, you know, from Guardians of the Galaxy, how like.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. It was a throwback joke.
I didn't
to get Guardians it. Of the Galaxy.
I got it now. I got it. I
it
got
just it. Happened a couple months ago.
I hate you.
But yeah, I don't want to see it happen. But one of the things I think is alarming about this is that Higgins is going to be a girl.
Why is it alarming?
She's going to be an English bird, and there's going to be some, I'm sure, some weird tension between Higgins and Magnum, and that's just going to be. I don't know if I can take that. I really can't. I'm gonna superimpose the original actors in my head when it happens, and it's just going to look gross.
So you never sensed any sexual tension with the original,
right?
Magnum and I mean, come on, Higgy baby.
Well, I
think there was some, you know, I'm sure we can find some lovely fiction about this potential scenario online. Yeah, no, the whole reboot thing in general, to me, the goose is cooked. It's just, it's retreading, not even culture that's old. You know, it's not even like, oh, hey, here's Route 66 reboot or something mm-hmm. that's at least a little bit more seasoned. I mean, the 80s weren't that long ago. On top of that, like, yeah, I mean, you can't replace Tom Selleck. I mean, I grew up watching Magnum P.I. In another world, I'm sure Tom Selleck would have been my stepfather if my mother would have had her way when when I was a little girl.
Mine too.
I mean, it's just it's such a cynical cash grab. It's you know, just leave Magnum P.I. alone. Leave it all alone. Make new shows. Make new movies.
I want a show about the origin of his mustache. That's all I want. I want like a weekly series where you see each hair grow and what they go through, like their journey. That's what I want. Like, make something deep and artistic.
No? That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
You like that? I was going for something deep. All right. Well, let's get off the deep track. How about Michael Bay? I did want to mention this. Michael Bay is producing a Dora the Explorer movie. She's going to discover a whole lot of ways to blow some stuff up. Is anybody excited about
that? That's real?
That's real. That's a real thing happening. Yeah.
Wait, are you... No. I saw that on the page. I thought it was, I just assumed it was like satire. This is a real thing?
Mm-hmm. He is producing a Dora the Explorer movie. Now, he's producing, he's not directing, so Ben Affleck won't be a part of it.
Ugh, God, the stink of Michael Bay. He just needs to not, Like, this is, why? People don't fight Michael Bay. This is the real scourge. I mean... Oh God! Is there anything that man will not rub his taint on and ruin? Like that's. Just, I'm sorry. Wow. He's awful. He's just no.
You know what? I used to be an unabashed, unapologetic Michael Bay fan. I will apologize for. I love Bad Boys. Bad Boys 2. You can't make me not love those movies. I don't care how bad they are. The Rock. You've got, and a lot of his repertoire up until he started doing only Transformers movies, I was into. And then about Transformers, well, after the first one, I started realizing Michael Bay just wants money. He just wants cash at this point. And he started losing me. This last Transformers, he might have gotten me on the other side of that fence where I can't defend him anymore.
You think he just wants money because as most of Hollywood is putting fans in charge of things, Michael Bay is the opposite. You know, he doesn't know anything about Transformers. So let's put him in charge of that. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, they're making a lot of money and that's not really fair, but yeah, I'm actually just kind of floored by the idea that this whole Dora the Explorer thing was real. I thought it was just a joke. And I can't take it. I mean, he messed up. He was just a producer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. How many people enjoyed that?
He was. Well, maybe this will make you feel better. The director is going to be the Muppets and Neighbors director, Nick Stoller. Does that help? Does that do anything for you? Neighbors was funny. The Muppet movie was pretty decent. Neighbors. Nobody. I don't think I'm winning anybody over because Michael Bay's still involved.
Yeah.
I haven't seen either one of those. The Neighbors I saw was like the 1981 film with John Belushi and our man, Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. From Dr. Detroit, Dan Aykroyd. Not from Ghostbusters.
No. We call him Dan Dr. Detroit Aykroyd. That's that's his name.
That's what he's known.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new Neighbors, and I haven't seen any of the newer Muppet movies, so I really can't... I don't know. I mean, any movie that's made, even if I think it's going to probably suck, if I'm surprised, that's good. You know, I'd rather things be good than not. So if it's good, great. I don't have... I mean, Michael Bay's awful, but...
Heather's not holding back. Bam, 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 bam.
I'm still stuck picturing Michael Bay's taint touching stuff, and I can't do it.
Thanks, that's Heather. What he does. I'm sorry. You know, he's totally like one of those like unneutered cats that just sprays. It's just like psst, like that. He's just like, that's fine. I put my stink on this. I've ruined it for you. You're never going to get it clean. Ha ha ha. You know, that's, I mean, I know it's gross, but I'm just trying to just preach the truth here. All know it's true.
I'm going to cry. I am literally going to cry. All right. Because I can't get that visual out of my head. Star Trek Discovery. I actually care more about what it means than I do that the renewal happened. But Star Trek Discovery landed a season 2 renewal for CBS All Access, which, hey, good for them. Good for Star Trek fans. Everybody seems to love the show. Does that worry you guys that more networks are going to go this route, like hiding new content behind that pay window?
It doesn't worry me at all, because I've said it before, I'll say it again. I cut the cord. I'm really happy with it. And everything I do now is behind a pay window, whether it's Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime, HBO, or if worst case scenario, if I can't get any of those places, I'm buying it off of Microsoft Video. So I don't care. I'm only watching what I want to watch, and it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. Good for them for putting entertainment out there that is pay, you know, going through a pay window to get to, because that also means no commercials, right?
Yeah, but if every network does that, it's going to get just more expensive than cable. Heather, you see what That's I'm saying, fine. Right? You're with me. You understand what my point here?
I see both points, because I'm like John. I too, like, you know, we have cut the cord, and mainly, I mean, get content through a Roku device, Roku, and that includes Netflix and Hulu. And but I also see the other flip, where if like eight, you know, if 80 other outlets do that, then you know, it is going to get expensive. I don't know. It'll be kind of interesting, I think, to see how, because cable is definitely getting more and more phased out, or is it going to just find another sort of form to adapt? And you know, I don't know. I kind of see both ends. I mean, I don't miss the cable bill, because our cable bill was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and we just had basic. Like, that wasn't even, we never even were paying like for extra channels like HBO or anything. But it was still like pretty crazy for, you know, given that there was only like two channels I cared about. Mm-hmm. That we had. But so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see just, I think, how things develop.
I wonder what the next form would be. I mean, you've got streaming. I don't know what else. Hardwired directly into your brain. There's nowhere else to go, right?
No, like, there really isn't. Implants? We all get Wi-Fi in our head.
Yeah, we get implants. That's the only thing I could see happening.
If you really think about the business structure behind Hulu, a lot of things are already sort of behind a pay door. I mean, if you want good Hulu content, you're paying for it. And a lot of that is from networks that are all invested in the Hulu. So the CBS is one of the few that isn't invested in the Hulu. That's why you can't get any of their shows on there, or at least the ones you can get are ancient. So it's already out there. It's already happening. CBS is just the first one to say, hey, we're going to do our own thing. And they've been doing it their own way for a good year and a half to 2 years now.
Yeah, but Hulu, man, you got a lot more option. It's not just, well, if you want to watch this one show, you're going to have to subscribe. If you want to watch our other show, you know, Hulu's got a lot of other network content. So there's more, you're getting more for your buck, I think. But
not CBS.
Well, CBS is getting greedy with it. Pretty soon you're going to have Big Bang Theory is going to be hitting me on a page. Like, you'll get it a week early if you want to subscribe or something. I could see that happening.
The people who want to do that will do that gladly.
You know what? I don't like logic in my debates. I really don't.
I will say this, like, when Twin Peaks came to Showtime, I mean, I actually did spend the extra money to have Showtime on our Hulu plan, mm-hmm. just for Twin Peaks. And when it went off, but here's the rub, though, is like, as soon as it was done, though, I basically went back to like our regular plan, because there wasn't really anything on Showtime that I wanted so badly.
Was it worth it to get Twin Peaks? Was that ultimately?
I did, you know what? I have to be honest. I didn't finish this season. And I will, because I am diehard. I love David Lynch fiercely. The whole Wally Brando thing, I don't know if it was just my violent reaction towards Michael Cera or what. I just, like, I'm going to take a break from this. My husband did watch all of it. He did tell me that there was not a lot. He wouldn't spoil anything for me other than there's not a lot of Ray Wise. Which bummed me out, because I've a lot. Ray Wise is the ultimate. Like, how can you not use? So I don't know. But
that's a good point.
So yeah, yes or no? I don't know. Wally Brando's all. Again, put him in the Michael Bay camp for me. No Wally Brando. Damn. I don't ever want to see Michael Cera as Wally Brando.
There's like a movie. Again. You got like a movie prison going on.
I do. It's like an island. It's a prison island.
Well, Michael Bay can come out.
Is it the island? Is it Michael Bay's The Island?
Yeah. Oh, God. Ew. Sure. Yes.
If it gives me Bad Boys 3, he can get paroled. That's all I got to say. All right. This is a... Yeah, I said it, Heather. I want Bad Boys 3. So...
I'm not judging. Listen, there's plenty of things I like that I cannot defend on... any sort of real level. On so any level. I'll defend them anyways because I have no shame.
Well, this is a fascinating case. Reardon LLC is suing Disney, Fox, and Paramount for their use of allegedly stolen CGI technology in their films, and therefore are claiming they might actually own the copyright of those CGI characters. That includes your favorite Marvel CGI characters. I am Groot. Could this actually happen?
No, I read the article from the Hollywood Reporter that you linked. Mm-hmm. You linked us to, and it is a very interesting case because, and I'll be the first to admit, you know, am I super well versed in things like lawsuits and copyright? Not particularly. The thing that's interesting is that it's basically, you know, you think about all the programs that are used to create art, but nobody's going to sue, like, Apple Photoshop. Because all kinds of art is created in Photoshop, but Photoshop doesn't own that art. Mm-hmm. They have no claims to whatever's created. So this is, I'm curious how all this is going to turn out because it's all about the software. Now, granted, part of it was that it was stolen from, I guess, a Chinese firm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and yeah, that's an issue. And, you know, the creators of the, you know, the original creators of the software definitely deserve some financial payback for that. But I don't know. I mean, to say that the software itself is tied to any copyright to me seems personally like a little dodgy, but I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
It's interesting looking into it because the thing about it is that they make a good case. However, their case to me hinges on, okay, I as a creator, I'm going to throw a bunch of things into a pile and this software is going to make it all happen. And that's what they're trying to make it sound like. But I'm actually thinking that this software is probably more like a filter that you apply to something. So the filter in this case just makes the bodies move or the facial recognition move or that sort of thing. So the actual creation of the polygons, the actual creation of the form, the model, all that is likely done someplace else. And then they use this software to make the movement happen. It's aggravating because they're trying, the lawyers for Reardon are trying to say that none of this is possible without their software. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think that none of it's possible without the creators and everyone who is come together to create these items and then overlay it on what the software does to create the movement. And that's all they're doing is creating movement. So I don't think they have much of a leg to stand on, just like Heather was saying about Photoshop can't say, well, you made that in Photoshop, so it's our art. They can't do that. And this is sort of the same thing. Whether or not the software was stolen or not, Disney and Fox and all these other people bought the software from a different company. That company may have stolen it, but it doesn't mean that Fox has to give up or Disney has to give up any ownership or rights to any of their characters because of it. In my mind, as an artist, as a creator myself, I don't buy it.
Yeah, it's quite a stretch. I mean, I get what they're doing. I think they're using that as more of a bargaining chip to say, hey, you know, we want a big cash payout, but if you don't make a great settlement offer, I'm thinking that maybe we could go for copyright. And there's a chance, even a slim chance that we could get it. I don't right. know. It's a pretty dicey topic. And the Hollywood Reporter link is actually in the show notes, so you can definitely go there and read it if you want to read up on it for yourself. I just found it fascinating that this would actually happen. And nobody would think that it was a possibility up until now.
No, and it's definitely a cash grab. I can totally see this as being one of those things where, oh, we're going to ask for A, but we're going to be okay when you give us B.
Oh, yeah.
Because either way, they're getting the D.
Heather, you can always count on one bad sex joke per episode. That's John's specialty. All right. There's your limit. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter. You can find us on @BuyPopcorn, or please share the show on Reddit, whatever social outlet you use. Please share the show. It does help the show. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic, where each week we talk about a topic on ours or our listeners' minds. And this week we're going to build a perfect horror movie. That's right. We're going to craft our own perfect horror movie, much like we did for summer blockbusters back in episode 273. But to get there, before we get there, we have to first find out exactly what you love or loathe about horror movies. So what do you love in your horror movies?
Oh, man, that's a beautiful and such a loaded question. And I love it for it. I guess for me, like when I think of all the horror movies I love, first of all, atmosphere. like establishing a really tangible atmosphere, interesting characters that are, you know, not that are, you know, not just like the average sort of caricature that you expect. Mm-hmm. Emphasis on really great lighting, whether that's in black and white, like older black and white horror films, or, you know, vibrant kind of colors, like especially like in your Italian, like giallos and those type of films. And definitely a great soundtrack. I think sound can be incredibly potent in, well, in all film, but especially horror. So those are some of the things I love a lot in my horror movies.
When you say sound and I assume, you know, with score and noise direction, sound direction, do you like when the music is queued up before a big event happens, or do you prefer there is no cue to?
I think it depends on how it's done. I think every director is different and every film is different. Some films, you know, when you think about some, especially when I think of like great soundtracks as far as like climactic, I tend to think kind of maybe like Hammer, like sort of 60s gothic mm-hmm. cinema, like Hammer films and some of the Roger Corman Poe films. And I'm a little rusty in those. I need to revisit them. I think to me, it's just, you know, it's not always what you do. It's the way that you do it, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. What about you, John? Stop giggling. You're still 12.
What? I didn't do anything. It wasn't me.
You thought it. Go ahead.
If I thought it, means you thought it. All right. I thought about this a lot because, you know what? I just want to be held. I want to be surprised. I want to be respected. I want the movie to buy me and buy my attention by giving me some respect. Understanding that I am not a dummy who's been to the movie for the first time. I want to know that they think that this is going to be something different, something special, instead of it being some cash grab or some joke about whatever they're trying to do. I want them to tell me what I should expect, and whether it's going to be a you know, a good time, a nightmare, any of those things. And then I want them to hold to that. I want them to really commit to it. It makes me crazy when movies kind of meander like I talk.
Well, at least showing up to it. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like,
what about you?
I like quiet scares. Quiet scares are my favorite. A door creaking behind a character with no sound, no cue. I'm a big no cue guy. Heavy infusion of atmosphere. I love atmosphere. And I prefer less gore, more implication. I mean, if there's a horrific act, I really love a quick shot. I like where we know something horrible's happened. Either we get the expression on the character's face, or we get, you know, maybe even a reflection in a mirror. We know something horrible happened. But we don't see it except for maybe like a quick frame or two, just enough to get you to debate what you actually saw. I love that. And when a movie can do that and can nail that, that is something that just really gets me excited in any movie, but especially horror movies. And then there are also times where I just like an axe-wielding lunatic carving up co-eds on a Friday. But for the most part, I like quiet scares.
Now, you think you like it because you feel more drawn in, or like, what makes you think you like that more?
I think there with most movies, I love to know that I'm in a movie. This might sound weird, but most movies, I love that I know I'm watching a movie. I'm escaping. It's a different world. In a horror movie, to me, it affects me more if I feel like it's real. And music cues take that away. Loud, you know, cats jumping out of cupboards takes that away. You know, things like that just take me out of it, because then I'm reminded this is a movie. When you have, and I love when filmmakers do this, when they have no score or very limited score, you don't hear much music, characters are just walking, something happens, and the director doesn't have to stick the camera on what happened to make sure you saw every bit of it, it affects me a lot more, because then your mind starts playing tricks on you. You think you saw something, maybe you didn't. Maybe it was, your mind will make it seem more ghastly and violent than it actually was, or more horrific. And that's why I love those moments.
Okay. I buy it into it entirely. To me, that's everything I was thinking of, how a director will respect you as a viewer by letting you enjoy it, instead of having to feel like he has to show you everything right there in your eye.
I like that. Now, on the same token, what do you loathe? Can't stand, want no part of, don't want it near your horror movie.
Well, like you mentioned, I don't like that big crescendo of music mm-hmm. just before something bad happens. It makes me crazy because you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well, it's going to happen. All right. And at this point in our movie watching career, we've gone through it so many times that it doesn't have the effect on us that that the creators want us to have. It doesn't sit there and say, oh my God, it's going to happen. Here it comes. Now we're just like, all right, well, please, any minute now. I don't like that. I don't like it when they try to use ridiculous jump scares for no good reason. The murderer that's doing everything, his head's rolling around on the ground. Why is his body suddenly jumping out at somebody? It doesn't make any sense. They didn't tell us that was a possibility. I don't get it. It's just weird things like that.
One of the things I absolutely love, well, and not even just in horror film, but film in general, and John, I thought you nailed this so beautifully when you're talking about that you want to be respected. And to me, it's like, if I feel like I'm watching, especially a horror film, where I feel like it's just everything is just so by the numbers. There's no effort. There's no vision. You know, there's no excitement. They're just clearly like, oh yeah, here's a dead little girl that's a ghost, and oh, here's a creepy doll, and all of that. It just, I'm just immediately like almost offended. I'm like, you're not even trying, and I can tell you're not even trying to make an interesting film. It doesn't necessarily have to be scary. I mean, I love horror films, but most horror films don't actually personally scare me, you know, and that's okay, you know, that's fine. But yeah, it's just don't do that. Don't at this point, like the whole, like, I hate the whole muted colors and tones that have really plagued, I think, a lot of modern horror mm-hmm. in the past, like probably 15 years, where everything's this dingy earth tone. Doing sort of like fast cuts, like music video style editing. It can't, I hate it.
It's awful.
I mean, I don't mind it as much from, like, say, Rob Zombie, because Zombie, I think, obviously loves horror film.
Oh, we will fight. You and I are going to have to duke it out.
Oh, no. Well, I haven't seen all of his films. I've only seen the first two, so okay. I can't speak to any of the Halloween remakes or
okay.
If you're or into that. I've just seen the first
okay.
two.
So. We're okay. We're still good.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
I was going to ask if I should just leave the room because Mom and Dad were about to fight. So
yeah. Yeah, son, you need to go to your room. Your father and I, we have to have a talk.
And it's strictly about the Halloween remake and how you...
No, I haven't seen it because that was one where I'm like, the original's fine. I don't need to see it remade. You know, like...
Oh, good for you.
But no, I mean, but as a whole, like, yeah, the music video style editing is cheesy. I'm not a big fan of CGI. I think practical effects contain more atmosphere. And to me personally, I think the problem with most CGI is it looks so shiny. You can tell it's fake. And mm-hmm. to me, like, the whole thing about horror is you're trying to immerse the viewer in this scenario, in this world. And the minute you see something that you know you can't physically touch or smell or see, like if you were actually in the film, then to me that, I mean, for me at least, that takes me out of it. I'm a practical effects girl through and through with horror.
How about gore? Speaking of practical effects, how do you feel about horror? Do you feel like, or I'm sorry, gore. Do you feel like gore should be kept to a minimum? Do you like heavy gore? Do you like guts hanging out? You know,
I like it all. I mean, to me, again, it just depends on how it's done. Because, like, for example, one of my favorite films is Lucio Fulci's The Beyond. I think that film is completely atmospheric. I think it's creative. I think it's unusual. I love it. I think the cast are great. I love everything about that film. And Lucio Fulci, for anybody who's not familiar with his work, like, he is one of the masters of gore in horror films. Like mm-hmm. these, you know, if you don't like gore, you just probably should just stay away from Fulci in general. If you see the name Fulci, you probably, you know, and I love Herschel Gordon Lewis and, you know, who's the godfather of gore, who made Blood, you know, Blood Feast and The Wizard of Gore and A Taste of Blood and Something Weird. And he's one of my favorites. So I'm not actually opposed to gore. Again, it's just how it's handled. If you're leaning on nothing but the gore, then, yeah, that's lazy. That's just laziness. It's not going to be effective. If you know how to incorporate it, I think, in an interesting way, mm-hmm. then it can absolutely work. I'm not opposed to gore. I'm just opposed to people being, I guess, boring. Don't be boring.
That's fair. That's a good point. A solid point. Don't be boring in a horror movie. Nobody wants to watch your boring movie, Aronofsky. Yeah, I said it. All right.
Dang it, burn.
Anything else that you don't like?
So there are certain scenarios that I think are really played out. I years ago, I had to review the Amityville remake, which was not fun for me. That was not a good remake. And I mean, which is sad because the original really isn't that great of a film.
Was that, like, was that the Ryan Reynolds one?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was like this whole thing where there's like this dead little girl, and it's like, and you could tell they were just thinking, oh, this is going to be so creepy. But because you knew that they expected that from you, it was like anything but creepy. It's just like, oh, this again, you know, like, and it's just, so I think people just need to, you know, I mean, you can make anything work, but be creative, you know, just, and for God's sake, no more music video editing, no more jump scares. I'm with you guys on that. Completely. Like, it's so expected. How is it going to be scary for anybody?
Yeah. And I love when people, you know, like, they got you jumped. Well, yeah, I jumped. That doesn't make me not hate it.
Like, it doesn't make them right.
Yeah, it doesn't make them right. It wasn't really scary so much as, all right, you tricked me. That's a gimmick that only works once. That's not horrific to me. You know, it's cheap scares. That's what I see. Yeah. Jump scares.
It's just lazy. It's just, you know, have some effort. Put some effort out there, guys.
Have some moxie. Somebody said the word. Who was that said moxie? It was like the.
Oh, I love that.
It's like a 1940s noir. Yeah, have some moxie, kid. Yeah.
It's also a particularly unpleasant soda, but that's a whole other podcast, I'm sure.
Moxie is? I've never heard.
Yeah, there's. It's like an older soda, but they still make it. It's I think it's more regional. Like, I want to say it's maybe more in like the New England part of the United States. But I have tried Moxie, and it's it doesn't have Moxie. It's a misnomer.
All right, I will try to avoid that. I've got several that I don't like. My number one is ghosts. I don't care. Don't want to. I've got one eye on the door whenever I'm watching a ghost story. They can get me. Conjuring got me. I mean, there are plenty of movies that have worked for me, but most of the time I'm just like, where's Scooby-Doo? Because this don't look real. It just, for me personally, I don't really subscribe to the supernatural, so it doesn't really affect me. And I really feel like ghosts are one of the few movie things that you kind of have to believe in for them to work well for you. It's a personal opinion. It's not like Jason. I don't need to believe in crazy, you know, machete wielders to believe in him. But ghosts, I feel like I should have to believe in them a little to get terrified. So they don't really do much for me. One thing that really bugs me in horror movies, people getting killed for having sex. It's 2017. I mean, everybody over 15 years old has had sex. Even if you're listening, even your kids, if they're over 15, they've had sex. I'm sorry to break it to you. So just let them boink and let's not keep killing teenagers. Nobody's with me. It doesn't feel like. I don't know.
No. I was just riveted.
It's literally sexist. That's what I'm looking at. It's literally sexist.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's expected. It's a trope at this point, too. Like, as soon as you see, like, some teenagers, and by teenagers, of course, we mean actors that are in their late 20s, especially if we're going by the, yeah, which is good. I don't want it to look creepy. But, you expect it. As soon as some girl gets naked for the shower, you know, she has just written her death certificate. So I guess basically people have to be dirty virgins. Like, and dirty, I don't mean like, you know, sexually impure. I mean, like, you're literally, you haven't showered in days and there's no making out. That sounds awful. That sounds like a miserable way to live, doesn't it? You're all stinky and you're sexually frustrated. Nobody wants that.
Just to survive. I just want to survive.
No, it's not good. There are films that are exceptions that I love that totally play on those tropes, but
most of those films that you love to play on those tropes are from the 80s and 90s when those tropes were being developed. So it was good back then because it's the originators, but now at this point it doesn't have the same kind of effect as it used to. That's one of those things where it's like when people try to bring that up or try to use that as something, you go, okay, well, I've seen this. Why aren't, you know, you're not really respecting my personal, what I've gone through to get here in your movie.
My journey. One, two more. I really enjoy when a killer kind of catches up to the victim. I really like that. You know, when we thought they got away, but the killer's right there. But not when they jump out in front of them, because, I mean, you're so hysterical. You didn't see like a 7-foot freak with a hockey mask in front of you. That I don't like that. I mean, I'm okay.
Tunnel system. It's a tunnel system underneath the camp.
Everywhere. So many movies have that. I mean, when the killer just jumps out in front of them and there's nothing but like a thin Christmas tree. Okay. I could see somebody hiding there. There's no way I don't see him like running at me to jump out in front of me. That's always boggled my mind.
A thin Christmas tree. A
very, very thin Christmas tree. Probably lit up.
It's like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree that you're trying to hide behind.
Yes.
I totally picture that, John. That's exactly what I was picturing. This little, poor little scraggly tree with like two ornaments on it, and there's a giant killer.
I think I've done that before. I'm going to hide behind this, and it's like a twig, and I'm way too big for that.
Yeah. See, they would see you coming. They would.
Yeah.
I'm going to hide behind this dollhouse. Yes.
That's why I do cardio. I got to keep up the cardio so that I can catch my victims.
And I like that. I respect catching them. I'm going to get ahead of them and jump out in front of them. And I was hiding here this whole time, or I just got here and nobody saw them that coming. I can't.
And they're never breathing heavy when they catch them like that too. They're not, no. You almost lost me at the boathouse. Whew. Here I am though.
Right.
I gotcha.
I gotcha. Wait. Just hold tight. All right. My last one. I don't want leprechauns, dolls, rabid dogs, hallway ghost twins, possessed kids, sparkly or sexy vampires. And I definitely don't want reboots of a series right in the middle of my slasher series, Halloween 3. So those are the things I don't want. All those.
I'm going to die by a rabid dog. I know it. Or radioactive dog. Radioactive puppies in Chernobyl. That's how I'm going to die.
What?
They're so cute.
So it would be adorable. Your death would be adorable.
Yeah. I'd be covered in radioactive Chernobyl puppies. I mean, that's the worst way to go, but it'd be adorable.
Nobody would be scared.
I have to say, Aaron, I'm with you on, for the most part, the whole creepy doll thing is so, I mean, unless somebody can pull out something that's the equivalent of like Doll Man, that Tim Thomerson.
Oh my movie. My God, woman. That's
No. Listen, my brain immediately goes to places like Tim Thomerson as a tiny man. It's Tim Thomerson in general. He's a great character actor. But what was that? Somebody would have to that's not really creepy doll, I guess. That's not really horror. So I guess otherwise, yeah, no, I'm with you. Like and especially these creepy dolls that don't even look creepy. Like anytime I've seen like something from Annabelle, which in fairness, I've seen none of those movies. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're good. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. not my thing. But that doll looks like, I mean, you look at her and I'm like, if you found that in your attic, you're not going to be like, oh, wow, what's that? You're going to be like, is this a bad haunted house prop? Like, what is this? It's ridiculous. And yeah, I'm actually kind of done with zombie films for now. I'm not going to say I fully loathe it because I love a lot of older zombie films. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of burnt out. So, you know, I don't know. I'm burnt out on it a little bit. That's maybe just a personal thing though.
Yeah. You got to kind of going back to what you said, it's how you do it. They've got to reinvent it. I mean, if they're going to keep cranking out zombie movies, it's got to be a new idea. It's got to be creative. It's got to be fun, maybe. Zombieland. I'd watch another Zombieland movie in a heartbeat. But definitely, yeah, zombies are dying.
Oh, yeah, no pun intended. Sorry.
No, that's great. So it's time for us to each unveil our – you know what? I wanted to go back to Tim Thomerson. What was it? Trancers? Was that his big series that he did like 45 of those direct-to-video
He was absolutely in Trancers, which also featured a young Helen Hunt.
Yes. Yeah, I did like that. I remember going to the video store so I could get Trancers 8 or whatever the hell they went up to.
In my opinion, some of the best Full Moon, because those were all from like Full Moon Video. Mm-hmm. The best those of the company was Trancers and, of course, Subspecies, which Subspecies is a brilliant example of how to take something like the vampire myth and create something really new while still kind of honoring like gothic horror, gothic cinema and everything. Like those first three especially are fantastic.
God, I gotta go. I just want to rewatch Trancers now. I'm sorry. I kind of want to stop the podcast and just go watch Trancers. I love that movie as a kid. Okay, sorry.
It's so good.
So it's time for us to unveil our next horror blockbuster. So give us your perfect horror movie. It's going to go John, Heather, me, your perfect horror movie. Plot, concept, scenes, whatever you can muster creatively, you can go ahead and throw it in here. It's up to you. Tell us your perfect horror movie. Build it.
All right. So my perfect horror movie is titled On This Night. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nice, cheesy horror movie name. This is going to be a whole little like a fun throwback to the grainy film type, or think about your 1980s tape that you watched a dozen times. The movie is going to be shot and filmed and shown pretty much in this sort of style, but everything that you're seeing is very contemporary. You got it's 2017 cars, 2017 phones, all that other stuff. It's actually all in this movie, but you're seeing it very much like an old grindhouse movie or an old tape of a horror flick you've seen a million times.
Okay.
And it starts out with a group of friends sitting around the TV. One of, you know, they turn off the TV. One of them stands up and he's like, "What did we just watch?" And then from there, this group of friends are start investigating what they're watching. And every now and again, they're throwing back to hints of what they saw and how it freaked them out. And it keeps coming back to them in their mind, but they're investigating it because they're really worried about surviving the night all of a sudden because of this. I can't figure out how I want the deaths to go, whether I want it to be a vengeful spirit kind of thing, or I want it to be like a slasher kind of monster thing. I don't know, but I don't think that's nearly as important as a concept of what these kids are going through. The night progresses. Everyone starts to die one at a time in their own horrible fashion. And then we get to the very last person. The very last person turns out to be the guy or the girl who was the one who stood up and turned the TV off and was like, "What did we just watch?" Or that. But and at this point, they're yelling at the guy that's been doing all the killing, going, "This isn't the way it's supposed to happen. This isn't the way we saw it. This isn't all this other stuff." And then boom, that person's dead. So
I want to watch that right now. That was
right.
That was good.
That was an awesome description.
I like it.
The credits start to roll.
Oh, there's more.
There's more. The credits start to roll on this, but then the screen just freezes. And after a brief moment, the screen kind of starts to pull back and you realize you're looking at a TV. And it's a very clear, very contemporary TV. Everything is in good high definition now. And the camera spins around and you see everybody that you just watched die in this movie just staring at the screen, open mouth gape. And the person who was the last person standing up is just standing up, looking at the screen. Everyone's shocked. End credits. Movie's done.
Whoa.
Oh, so, that is cool.
So are they all alive then? Man, don't make me get a headache.
See, what's beautiful about this idea is that you can technically build a series out of this, a good like a slasher series or monster series, and the first movie would be everyone watching what happened, and then the next movie is them trying to survive the night and doing things kind of different from the first movie. So it, you know, purposely doing things different from the first movie. So it's kind of like if you take Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, how they're the same movie but different. Kind of like that. I think that'd be kind of fun and different and new.
I like it. That's a really good idea, man.
Yeah, I do too. Well, especially because I love a lot of my favorite like horror films tend to have ones that have like something that kind of leaves you at the end of it being like, huh, but not in a bad way, just kind of like, you know, something that kind of gives you something to chew on a little bit, but in a smart way. Like, that's a smart way to do a twist of sorts. I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was very proud of myself when I thought of that one.
And no box of flies.
No box of flies. I was really trying to take it seriously, and I was like, how am I gonna beat the box of flies? And granted, this is no box of flies, but it's still pretty good.
Wasn't that from our building summer episode? Didn't you do box of flies in that one?
No, I think it was there was a different one that we were trying to do.
New listeners are like, what the hell are you talking about? John had concocted this. We were trying to come up with like legitimate threats to people in movies that could be used that haven't been used, and he came up with a box of flies. And for right. some reason, it became very people. It caught on. People really liked the idea of someone throwing a box of flies. It was just so absurd. That's why it was so.
It was how to beat villains. That episode.
That's
how
what
to
it get, was.
How to beat the villains. And that's that. Was, the box of flies was necessary to beating Loki.
So stupid. All right, Heather. Do you have your movie ready? Do you have a movie to sell us? Did you build one?
I do. Now, I'm going to give you a heads up. Mm-hmm. Like, John's movie, it's so beautifully, you know, John, it's like you already have, it's like a shot list. You got the script proofed. You are, like, good to go. This is a very loose pitch.
That's
Mine
fine.
Is a loose pitch. And I'm not good at building blockbusters because my taste is so organic. It's just weird. But this is what I came up with. Okay. Is that if I had my druthers. And I had, like, all the budget, and I wanted to make a serious horror film, because otherwise I'd want to make a 6-hour, like, horror musical comedy biker film.
Yeah!
I'm actually going to give you two options here. Do you want that pitch, or do you want the other one?
I want both. I mean,
why not both? Could both be an option?
Can we have both?
Los dos?
Okay, well, I'll give you the first one. The first, my 6-hour opus, it's untitled, but check this out. the core of the film is centered around a really skeevy ladies man played by Tom Waits, who's like the kind of guy that takes like a girl to like a Mexican buffet, like a really cheap one, and then at the end he's like, "So, baby, I bought you dinner," like that. Like, he's that kind of guy, and he wears like net shirts, like see-through net shirts. So, ooh. In other words, he's awesome.
Just like John, actually. So, yeah, I'm with you. Yep.
John, you're the man. That's amazing.
Yeah. I have a whole closet full of see-through net shirts. I look awesome in them.
And so, but there's all these subplots. So, Tom Waits, his character, is the center. Nearby are a group of, like, fun-seeking, like, beach, like, teenage beach bombs. And they see, like, a castle that is on an island that is just a few hours, or not a few hours, just a few miles away. And there's all these sort of like great myths and legends about this castle and who lives there. And two of them decide, hey, let's go check it out one night. And they get on a little boat and they make it to the castle. The castle is run by a bunch of like Euro trash vampires who are doing all kinds of satanic blood rites, and they're having orgies, and there's all this great like Italian music being played, or maybe even like Serge Gainsbourg. Maybe we'll go French for this. Like they're real like chic sleazy. So there's that. Now the other kids get kidnapped by some bikers that are all hopped up on meth, amphetamines, and acid.
Okay.
And there's musical numbers in this. I don't know if I mentioned that. There's going to be musical numbers. Mm-hmm. And somehow Tom Waits's ex-wife, her kid, that may be his daughter, they never did a blood test, I'm not entirely sure, but is one of the kids that gets kidnapped. So he gets involved, and it's up to him to rescue the teens, both from the bikers, but also the sleazy European orgiast satanic vampires.
I love this.
I mean, I would watch it.
6 hours might be going for it a little bold. But
well, if Michael Bay can make a 3-hour Transformers movie, then damn it, I'll watch 6 hours of Tom Waits solving crime and devil worshiping vampires and beach blanket bingo. I mean, come on. It sells itself, really.
There are many people who would argue that Michael Bay could not make a 3-hour Transformers movie.
Yeah, he actually didn't make a 3-hour Transformers movie.
Did it just feel like 3 hours? I haven't watched
it. It just wasn't a Transformers movie. It was a bunch of metal fighting metal and stuff.
Smashy robot.
That is not the Transformers from my childhood.
No.
That's no, it's
all
not.
I'm going to say on that.
All right. So what's your legitimate pitch? Do you have two? So that's
legitimate. That's totally legit.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way.
I doubt it even. The other one would be sort of a gothic style, more traditional, called The Hollow Inn. And it's about like this group of, you know, writers who are journalists for like a travel magazine are invited to go to this old house in New England and to do a story on this little quaint bed and breakfast. And one of the writers ends up very quickly kind of unearthing that this house locally does not have the best reputation. And in fact, was built by a family in the early 1900s that had come into money. And their son was sort of this ne'er-do-well who got involved in the occult and, you know, was using opium and just sort of the black sheep of the family. And in fact, was part of a fire that happened in a smaller, like a carriage house on the property. And there was always rumors that the fire was done, you know, because of, you know, basically him tampering too much with the occult and dredging up something, and five people died in it. And so she ends up also having this weird interaction with the caretaker there, who ends up being a blood lineage to this. And you know, it's just basically kind of involving like the sins of the fathers kind of thing. But also my twist would be, as she kind of does more research and actually talks to like a local, like a lady that does like kind of like tarot card readings and all that's kind of a sham, but the lady actually does know her stuff when it comes to occult matters, tells, you know, basically finds out that the guy didn't really know what he was doing with the occult. So it's not so much like a demon spirit that's been unleashed. It's more just like, you know, dude didn't know what he was doing. And so I don't know. I guess that doesn't sound very scary. I'm sorry.
No, like, I like it.
I've actually ruminated on for years on the Tom Waits film. So I don't know. Yeah, John, yours was so good. I'm feeling kind of like, I don't know. I just want to make a gothic old house movie with, I don't know, just lots of shadows, good music, weird character actor people, probably some strange sexuality in the mix. And basically, you know, that, you know, I don't know. So I feel shy Repo now.
Right? I'm seeing Repo, the Genetic Opera, but oh, on God. Crack.
But this isn't a musical, though. Oh, wait, are you talking about the 6-hour Tom Waits film?
Well, yeah.
Oh, no, that would, yeah, the music would be better, though. Because I had problems with Repo, the Genetic Opera. Like, I liked some parts of it. I thought Bill Moseley was amazing in it. But he's amazing in everything. And Ogre from Skinny Puppy. I don't know, yeah, that's a whole other thing. Awesome. I love Ogre. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know. Aaron, what's your pitch?
I'm focused. I really like your second idea, but I gotta be honest, the 6-hour musical, biker, vampires, the orgies, everything about that was just sounds phenomenal. Like I could watch that for a long time.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I mean, shouldn't. I probably shouldn't, but I will. I would love it.
You totally should. Wait till you see the Blu-ray. Like the extras, amazing.
They're real orgies. Like it's actually happening.
It's like, well, you know, like there's the whole thing of The Howling too. Yes. Have you guys seen The Howling too? Where yes. there's like werewolf orgies, but I guess like the actors were locals and they just did, I guess there was a language barrier because they just started straight up doing it. Like they just were like, okay, we're in it to win it.
And Sybil so. Danning's in the back going, wait, what? What? Yeah. What is going on?
She's in the back getting mad because the director, Philippe Mora, like edited her top to be ripped off a bunch of times in the
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. All right. Well, I got a movie. I don't have a title. I couldn't come up with a title, but I have an entire movie. So you guys are going to have to be patient with me. Okay.
All right. Patience. We're ready. We're bracing ourselves.
I'll do the whole thing. It's basically a screenplay. So it might take 120 minutes. All right. So this little boy, Billy, wakes up. His room is full of movie posters and family pictures, and the camera would show all that. He seems very upbeat, and it's established early that he lives in a remote farmhouse with his, well, I'll tell you, away from everything. He's basically away from everything. His mother and father both live there. They're together, but they're estranged, kind of living separate lives. Dad works on the farm while mom works in the city 15 miles away, and she gets back late every single night and hasn't said a word about his birthday, which is tomorrow. Dad is the only one who's there for Billy all of the time. So Billy bounces down the stairs as tomorrow is his 11th birthday, and he's screaming, here, boy, looking for his dog, obviously. So he looks around, no dog. Here, Scout, opens the front door, and he finds Scout murdered, dead, right in front of him on the front porch. We see the panic and tears in Billy's face, and then a quick flash of the dead dog. Like I said, I'm very big on the quick flash, so you don't actually see much. You just see like a frame or two of what happened to the dog. So his dad comes racing from the barn and sees the dead dog, but he has no idea what to think. He thinks it might be an animal attack, or it could be the area kids, bullies that pick on Billy all the time, a bit too much. They're kind of sadistic. four boys that actually happened to be watching from afar. They're watching as they find the dog because it was them. Sadistic little bastards. It was them. So these boys are laughing at their own cruelty, and they spend a good 10 minutes of the movie discussing horrible things they can now do to Billy and kind of setting up some plans for what they're going to do. Then one of them turns around and finds a large man whose face is shadowed standing in his way. So the kids start talking smack because they're stupid. One of them whips out a knife that killed that dog and threatens the man. He lunges at him. The man grabs the knife and kills that little bastard. The other three boys, they run. And one by one, this man picks them off in horrific ways. Strangulation, tossing one off a mini rock cliff. Lastly, the knife is thrown from 20 feet away and gets the last kid in the back. We never see the killer's face. Everybody with me so far?
Yes.
Okay. We eat some more screen time showing Billy and Dad in their natural element. The sheriff shows up to Billy's house that night saying that four boys have turned up missing, those same four boys. The exact same four boys that his dad was worried about. Dad tells Sheriff about the dog. Sheriff says to be careful, make sure that nothing's going on, you know, just keep an eye on your farm. Billy keeps thinking he's seeing a figure around the field. Like he's seeing something in the cornfield. He's seeing something walking or creeping around, but he can't prove it to his dad. So his dad thinks he's just seeing things. He's a kid. Night comes, everybody's in bed. Billy is once again paranoid. And then someone tries to come into his window. He's trying to open it very slowly. Billy sees it. Billy starts screaming, screams his head off and slams the window shut right on whatever that was in the window. His dad runs in and Billy screams exactly what happened. Dad runs outside, sees nothing, runs around the farm, sees nothing, picks up the phone to call the police, but that line is dead and they don't get cell coverage out here. So Dad is getting ready to leave to go to the sheriff's station when Mom pulls up. Dad shoos Billy into the house and Mom walks in. They catch her up to speed exactly with what's been going on. And they all agree that they need to head into town and alert the sheriff. These aren't stupid horror people. You know, they're not going to stay at the house, even though the phone's dead and Billy saw something and the dog's dead. You know, they're going to go to the sheriff and tell him what's going on. As they run out to Mom's car after they had this conversation, the tires are flat. They run the dad's car, tires are flat. So they have no choice. They're going to have to run 15 miles to town. So the rest of the movie is a little bit of a chase film as Mom, Dad, and Billy attempt to flee from an elusive killer who they escape from numerous times. So the killer catches up to him and then they get away and then he catches up to him and they get away. And at some point, the killer catches Dad and guts him because we just spent half the movie thinking Dad was going to be the hero and he's no longer part of the story. So Dad is now out of it. It's Mom and Billy. So as Mom and Billy are near the sheriff's office near the end of the movie, they're almost there. They finally make it. They've gotten away several times. They still don't know who this killer is. The killer catches up to them once again, grabs Mom, and starts to strangle her. Billy, he's kicking, he's screaming, he's pleading, and the killer's face finally comes into the light, and Billy just says, "Jesse?" The reveal is that you saw this killer earlier in the family pictures on Billy's nightstand, and it was Billy's older brother, Jesse. Billy begs him to stop, and all Jesse says is she's worse than him, and he kills their mom. So then Jesse turns to Billy, and everybody thinks that this is it. This kid's going to die. And he looks like he's reaching to kill him. Another chase ensues. And then Jesse finally does catch him after Billy, you know, gets him a few times and wounds him a couple times. Jesse just picks him up, walks to the sheriff's station, hugs him, kisses him on the cheek, and says, "Happy birthday, champ." Puts him down. No, hang on. There's more. Puts him down.
Oh, my God.
And walks away into the night. So Billy tells the sheriff everything. And the sheriff turns Billy over to his aunt. And they starts to look into Jesse. Turns out he's been in military school for years, and he escaped just this morning. He left a note for his roommate saying he won't let this happen again, not to Billy. So with a bit more research from the sheriff, we learn Jesse's dad molested him beginning on his 11th birthday. And when he threatened to tell, Dad sent him to military school. When he told his mom, she didn't believe him. And the whole time, this whole movie, Jesse was just trying to protect his brother from the same fate.
I dig that.
Whoa.
I like that twist.
Huh? Just think.
Holy cats, man. I love it. That is messed up. and it's truly unexpected. That's good. That's really, really good.
I got to write it. I got half of it done, so I might as well just go write the rest of the screen.
I was about to say.
You got the outline.
I might. I have to come up with a title. Listeners, if you got a good title for that, put it in the Facebook. We always put the post in the Facebook group. Go there or hit us up on Twitter or send us an email. Feedback at the Hollywood Outsider.com. I'd love to know any ideas for a title for my eventual masterpiece. So cool. I'm glad you guys liked it. Make sure anybody listening, let us know which one of these pitches you like the most or what you would like to see done with it. Maybe if you happen to be a producer, get a hold of one of us and we'll make a deal. You know what I'm saying? We'll work it out. Did you guys have fun?
Yeah, it was a good time.
Absolutely. I feel like the kid that like has the like is third place in the science fair. Like your guys' pitches were so good.
No, this is the first time you've ever even been on this podcast. So, you know, you get the newbie curve right there. And two, you came up with two pitches and one of them had musical bikers. You can't top musical bikers. You just can't.
And did I mention one of the musical bikers is Tim Thomerson?
Okay, now you just crossed the line.
How dare you?
That's hysterical. All right, well, now we go to our listener comments and that you guys want to discuss where they talked about what they love or don't love about the topic, which is how to make a great horror movie. So we always put the post in the Facebook group. So if you ever want to find the topic of the week, you know, always go there and comment. John, why don't you start us off? What are your three listener picks for comments?
All right, up first, I have Peter Dennis. I love the less is more approach taken by movies like Blair Witch, whereas having to use your imagination is way more scary than having it shown to you. It all goes back to Jaws and the mechanical shark breaking down. The thought of Jaws was way scarier than the reality of Jaws. I you know, he's absolutely right, and that's something you've been saying throughout this whole segment, Aaron, about how less is more. The thing I loved about Blair Witch, I mean, that movie effectively made me scared of a pile of sticks when it first came out, or effectively made me scared of a guy who's just staring at the corner of a wall. Like, what was that? Why am I scared of a pile of sticks? Why is he staring? You know, it did a really good job of really sucking you in, and yeah.
That's good. I'm kind of curious, Heather, you're not, mm-hmm. You kind of go to more unique films, I guess. How do you feel about films like Blair Witch and more that kind of populist entertainment?
I thought Blair Witch was, it was very interesting. It was not the first film to really use found footage. Because an earlier example of that would be a film that definitely has a lot of heat on it, and some of which is very understandable, called Cannibal Holocaust. Oh, though the things that actually work the best in that film aren't even the gore, you know, or definitely, which I'm definitely not pro like animal violence for real. But, you know, but the things that there's like a tonality in that film where it's, you know, I guess I think that one of the things I find very effective in horror is horror films that make you feel some kind of weird, hard to swallow truth about our own nature, mm-hmm. as people, you know, as a species. Blair Witch, you know, the thing I did dig about Blair Witch is, yeah, the whole thing that, you know, Peter and you, John, tapped into, which is like the unknown, and mm-hmm. that, which is something that has fueled, I mean, in some ways probably fuels, you know, horror in general, if you think about it, but that's always kind of cool, is that, you know, the shadows in a lot of ways are always going to be more interesting than the light.
Yeah. And John, I want to give you applause because so many people refuse to acknowledge that the Blair Witch was scary when it came out. You know, when they saw it.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody, it's not cool. Not cool anymore. But it didn't scare me. Hey, it didn't even flinch. Shut up.
Yeah, no. I was in a theater. I was in a full theater. Everybody in that theater jumped and moved around and was scared with sticks. So I don't buy it when people say that they weren't scared of that movie.
Not if you saw it when it first came out. I think it matters when you saw it, where you saw it. I think that does matter, you know.
Right.
All right.
I agree. Next? All right. Nate Bruce. More suspense and put the hero in danger. I love gore, but I'd rather use the budget for sound, lighting, more Sixth Sense, less The Happening. And he goes on to also say one thing that classic horror movies had that was eerie sound. That theme song when Michael Myers was looming, or the shower scene, the screeching and for Psycho, the noises of Blair Witch adds to the moment. You know what? This is something else we all three of us touched on. I mean, the atmosphere, how they buy us into the movie, how they get us. And I agree. Couldn't agree more with these. All right. Jennifer Maloney. I hate jump scares, but I love creepy atmosphere. My favorite horror movies are the ones that are intriguing storyline and make you curious as to who did it and why is it happening. Yep.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad she acknowledged that she hates jump scares. All right. Is that three or is that three?
That was three.
All right. Heather, you're up.
All right. I have Jennifer Miller. And what's funny, this is, I love how all of these comments, it's like, we are obviously have found our tribe with a lot of these people. Cause yeah, we've touched upon a lot of this already, but she wrote, jump scares are fine, but the Alfred Hitchcock approach is better. It's the anticipation of the impending peril that gets me every time. And, which is wonderfully put, Jennifer. And I agree. I think because that's part of the atmosphere, too, just in general, is that anticipation, that pregnant dread. If you can, like, if a filmmaker can really create that, that is like such a heavy feeling. And it's a craft to really do that. You know, even if you know what's coming, if it's done well, if that tension is created really well, like I think George Romero was one of the masters of that, because even if you knew somebody was doomed, you still feel it and you still care and you can still taste it and, you know, and smell it and feel it 100%.
That's good. Romero's early work doesn't get enough attention, I think. I mean, I think he's kind of shadowed by the later half of his career, where he kind of lost touch with what he is very societal impact that he had. The early films,
you know, Romero has made more classics than not, and he was a game changer. That's the thing I think that's, to me, is always impressive, is he didn't just reinvent the wheel, he made a whole new wheel, you know, for it. And that's you know, God bless him. I love George Romero. Yeah,
good call.
My next one is Mac Herring, Mac, if I'm mispronouncing your last name, I'm so sorry, sir. he wrote, atmosphere is the moneymaker for me. Even the absence of a provocative atmosphere can build suspense. So that's, I don't know, which is interesting. I think atmosphere, again, that's something we've kind of all touched upon. But again, like, that's one of the things I would stress to anybody trying to make a horror film, is think about everything that you're using to establish this world. Don't just be like, oh, here's a severed head and here's a little scary doll or whatever. Think about just everything that's tied into what you can do. All the, you know, it's like painting. You want to, you don't want to just use one color. You want to use several variations of color to create layers and, you know, shading and variations of a theme. So
yeah, very good.
And last but certainly not least, Thomas Bex. Thomas wrote, surprise, but not in the form of jump scares, but by an unexpected yet realistic twist. Also, I've seen many horror films with a great premise build up to a fantastic atmosphere, only to completely fall apart in the final act. Chernobyl Diaries was one of those, as was the latest Blair Witch. I didn't pick that quote for the two films mentioned because I haven't seen either one of them. But I think it's a good point. You know, it's, you know, there's nothing worse than having that great build up. And then it's just like, oh, no, why? You know, like, why'd you peter out like that?
Well, the Chernobyl Diaries needed puppies at the end. And that would have solved their ending dilemma.
That's right.
Oh, it's like Air Buddies, but with death.
Right. Cute death. Cute, adorable death that just wants to play and have a good time.
Yeah, they're gonna give you kisses.
Air death buddies.
Air buddies. Sorry.
All right. Was that the third one? I think that was three. Yep.
That was the third one, yes.
Okay, my first is Craig Schermerhorn, who has never met a quote he couldn't make longer. It says, I love the things that have a base in reality, zombie movies where it is a viral infection that impacts the adrenaline centers and drives maniacal behavior is far scarier than Night of the Living Dead type of zombies. I don't know if I agree with that, but I see what you're saying. Hush or The Strangers or Don't Breathe over Hellraiser, Jeepers Creepers, or The Ring. The evil of humanity is scarier than the evil of a sci-fi or horror author or writer's creativity. Loathe the trope where killings can go on longer than needed because no one will talk to each other, or they are trying to keep someone from finding out their mother, father, or kid is infected, or people are being stupid and the killings continue because they don't want to communicate. It's like running from a cop because you left your insurance card at home. That's a really good point. That one we did not touch on that. That's a really good point. People that hide those kinds of infections when they that are actually costing people's lives as opposed to, you know, saving anyone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, which that again, actually Romero, again, that's a obsessive of Romero. Like there's, I always like it when he's pulled into where somebody's trying to hide. And it's not even, I think, done selfishly. It's like just, I don't know. I think when we're put in a very extreme situation, maybe your first instinct as a person is just, you have to survive, mm-hmm. you know, and rational thought is probably going to go out the window. Maybe. I don't know.
John, are you still there?
I feel like Heather just says everything so completely and fully that I feel like if I say anything, I'll be, what she said. Yeah, that's, there we go.
Okay.
Oh God. Am I talking over you, John? Like,
no, you're not talking over me at all. You just get there before I do. And then you say it so well. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to sound like a moron if I say anything after that.
Cause that's it. All right. Well, Stefan Smidebeck says, make the characters likable.
Hey, you said it right.
I know. I've been working on it all day. Make the characters likable and three-dimensional. Don't show the monster, but make people imagine what they look like. That makes it more scary. I think Babadook could probably be a good example of that if you were a fan of that movie. Film it in a way that you feel, which I was, by the way, film it in a way that you feel that you got put in the character's shoes and experience that you almost are in their situation. Good points. Mm-hmm. And lastly from me, Susie Schrank. I enjoy realistic horror movies, I guess, like Home Invasions or something like Last House on the Left. Oh my God, that's a horrific film. Dealing with just six sadistic individuals and not necessarily something supernatural. Yeah, those usually get me, like Home Invasion stuff, because that's your safe place. That's your one place where you shouldn't have to be concerned about crazy axe murderers showing up. And then they do.
Yeah, those are scary because of, yeah, you're right. The safe place, they can show up, but they're scary because they're easier to buy into the realness of it. When you, some of these movies really have to work their ass off to get you to commit. They have to really get there to, you know, if it's a ghost, it's not that it doesn't work on you. It's that a lot of people don't put in the work to buy Aaron Peterson.
I'm not for sale, brother.
Well, when it comes to movies, you are. Oh, trust me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm for rent. Absolutely. You
know, right.
Bills got to get paid.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much once again. And now we move on to What's This Movie? And before we get there, I want to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. And we have a new supporter in Nate Bruce. So thank you, Nate, for contributing as well as everyone else at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And it helps pay for a myriad of expenses on your favorite podcast, web hosting, apps, podcast production, support, John's box of flies. Not only does it keep our show going, but you actually get material for your efforts. It's not like we're just asking you to give us something for nothing. If you donate $5 a month, you receive 2 bonus episodes a month. You actually get a complete bonus episode plus Bad Movie Night, where we look at a very, very bad movie and tell you why it sucks. And I think, what is this? This month's is Deathgasm.
You're the only one that really felt like it sucked.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. Well, let's move on from that. Let's go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now, let's go to What's This Movie? For this game, we pick a movie suggested by either our host or listener. It's going to be Heather this time. Heather gets the option of either playing a clip, doing a What Am I, a riddle, a limerick, or a haiku. She's going to do a clip. And then if you think you know what the movie is, and she's going to pick a hard one. So you better know your stuff. Let's see how good you are at this game. Email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or hit the contact tab in your app, and we'll give you a proper host shout out on the next episode. Last week's clip, by the way, was Scott's, and it was Trading Places. Those that guessed that correctly were Craig Wilkinson, Kyle Nolan, Dave Gulick, Manuel Perez, Will Ross, Marshall Maddox. And I do want to say, overwhelmingly, most of the guesses were for Coming to America.
Mm.
The other Eddie Murphy movie, I guess. So
the other, he says, as if there wasn't more than two.
Exactly. Well, like I said, this week is Heather's chance to confuse us all. So here is her clip.
Attaboy, Mike. Attaboy. Attaboy, Mike. Oh boy.
All right, now we go to our spoiler-free reviews. There are 4. We'll try to get through them pretty quick, but the first one is Archer, or The Archer. I don't want to leave out the, that's very important. Lauren Pierce is an accomplished archer on her school's archery team. Late one night, in defense of her best friend, I might add, she attacks that friend's boyfriend and finds herself arrested and shipped off to a troubled teen camp in the middle of the forest. It's a facility for young women, and it's run by Bob, a greedy SOB who loves to teach tough love. And he also lets his son take the helm as a pervy guard as well. Once Lauren realizes she's being kept there far longer than she should be, and also that the punishment they receive is quite cruel, she decides to bust out with her new friend Rebecca and make a way to civilization. I would say that The Archer is actually a pretty solid film. Billy Noble is Lauren, and she carries the movie entirely on her back. She's very tough, she's independent, she's smart and cunning. And what I liked most about her character is she's also a teenager. You know, a lot of times in movies like this, you get an actor who's basically 35 and she's in a 15-year-old's body. She's acting tough and independent, but she's a teenager, and at times she acts impulsively. So unlike Katniss Everdeen, Lauren actually makes mistakes that prove that she's young, and I actually respected those elements of the film. It's a lean and very taut thriller. It kind of glides through to the end. Like, once it gets going, it never really lets up. And it's a very solid thriller. I do recommend it. But the only thing keeping it from being one of those great undiscovered thriller gems that you might find this time of year is Bill Sage as Bob. It's a very one-note villain, and it's just not a very deep villain. I think to make a great thriller, you have to have a great villain, and unfortunately, Bob is not so great. But the movie is a fun ride. So if you're looking for a thriller with very little gore, a breakneck pace, and a great lead in Bailey Noble, The Archer is now on video on demand. And if $10 is the full price of admission, I would give it $6.50. I am just all over tonight.
Yeah, you're having a good time. This is loose and wacky, Aaron. I blame Heather.
I'm sorry. I'm the chaos element tonight.
Well, tell us about Wheelman.
All right. So Frank Grillo is the Wheelman. He spent 3 years in jail and he's working to get his life back together again. On this night, the movie that takes place, he picks up his charges, who are a couple of bank robbers, and takes them to the bank they're about to rob. In the process of the robbery, he gets a phone call and then his night falls apart from there. If I was going to describe this movie, I would say that if you are a fan of Locke, but really wanted to stay awake the whole time, then this is the movie for you. Because the way...
The Tom Hardy movie, right?
It's Tom Hardy movie.
Yeah, that was a nap.
It wasn't a nap of a movie. But hey, the idea was cool. And I think they took that idea and they made something beautiful. So as the viewer of the movie, you do not leave the car. You are right next to the Wheelman. You're dealing with everything he's dealing with. You're seeing things from the point of view of a passenger in the car. And it really helps to suck you into the movie. You really get brought into the action. It's very voyeuristic, very immersive. And the action just really engulfs you. Frank Grillo is awesome. Even though he's sitting in a chair nearly the entire time, he doesn't let the tension fall out of the scene. He keeps it on his face the entire time. He is really there. He's really scared, and he really makes it happen. The movie is beautiful to look at, too, because if you are a fan of shows like Top Gear or The Grand Tour, those videographers must have been on vacation and decided to moonlight here, because they did some great things as far as building up action and showing you what kind of cool shots they can come up with from the inside, from the side, from underneath a car, and it was really a good time. The upgraded 4K experience that I have with Netflix was really well worth it, and if $10 full price admission, this one got $7 for me.
So you're on board with my Frank Grillo crush.
I am on board with your Frank Grillo crush.
He is so sexy. Sorry, Heather. I mean, just so you know, I kind of love that dude. He's really cool. So.
Hey, no judgment. You go with the passion.
Put him in all the things. All right. Well, listen up, guys, because I'm about to talk to you about The Snowman. So Snowman, that's what it was. I'm going to use that as a verb from now on. Michael Fassbender stars as a cop on the trail of a new agent. That's right. The Snowman is a serial killer who keeps kidnapping potential hits from Michael Fassbender, leaving him with nothing but flops in their wake. I'm sorry. That's not actually what happened. Michael Fassbender is a cop hunting down a serial killer who kidnaps moms. It begins with a prologue that completely explains the killer's motives right off the bat. So if you're wanting to think, don't worry about it. This movie's got it handled. You're going to be okay. Rebecca Ferguson plays a cop with a history who teams up with Fassbender's cop, Harry Hole. I don't care if that's his name in the book. I don't care. Worst movie name in the history of detective movies, where you're supposed to be taking this guy seriously. And anytime somebody says his name, it's supposed to be Hole, I think, or Holy, close to that in the actual pronunciation in Norway. But it's Harry Hole. It's a stupid name, man. Change it. Make it anything else.
Hoyle? It could have gone Hoyle?
Something. H-O-E-L. Just flip it up so people have to work for the jokes instead of just lining them up so easy. Anyway, they together are working to bring this serial killer down, all while the killer toys with them. They should just call this movie The Nap Man because the pacing is awful. There is a great story in here. I legitimately believe there is a great story in here somewhere. Unfortunately, Fassbender's agent and the director stole it. So they're hiding it. It's somewhere in a lockbox. I don't know where it is, but Fassbender needs to find it if they ever want to put this movie back together again. The transitions between scenes were about as seamless as an Etch-a-Sketch. There are several pointless plot devices that lead nowhere. It's a frustrating movie because I don't think it's an awful movie. I don't think The Snowman is awful. It just feels like it's a movie that doesn't even care about itself. It expects us to care about it, but it doesn't care about itself. And Fassbender looks like he gave up halfway through it. Like, he just realized, this is probably not going to be good. It's probably not. And it's really sad because I think Rebecca Ferguson is great. I think she does every single thing she can to make this thing interesting. And Fassbender tries for like 45 minutes. And then he realizes, man, if you don't care, I don't care. And I already know what the killer's motives are. So why should I try so hard? Ultimately, I think The Snowman is, wait for it, a deep freeze. So if $10 is the full price permission, I give it $4. And that's mostly because I think Norway is a beautiful place and the cinematography is great.
Well, I think a couple months ago, I pointed out how Michael Fassbender was talking about how he can't wait to do another X-Men movie. And I said, what's wrong? Why can't he do something better with himself? And people jumped on me for that. Mm-hmm. I feel kind of vindicated.
Oh, you are. There is no excuse for the talent this movie has. J.K. Simmons is in the movie in a pointless role. Rebecca Ferguson, Michael Fassbender, and a lot of the actors. There's nothing wrong with any of the actors involved. It's completely at the hands of the director and the pacing and the editing. It's like they just blew the movie. And I know the director is going around and he's saying, well, you know, I didn't get everything I needed to do. I needed 10% more movie to get this made and they wouldn't let me make it. Man, you assembled this movie. You're responsible for it. I realize studio interferences and budgets run low, whatever. It's not a movie. It doesn't feel like big pieces are missing. It feels like you didn't know how to tell the story. That's what it feels like to me. And I think it's just another whiff in Fassbender's career. I think he chases the money more than the roles, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Heather, how do you feel about Fassbender? Are you on the Fassbender train? You like the Fassbender?
What I've seen of him, he's really good. He's not like one of my top favorites working right now. Though I love J.K. Simmons. Like, he's awesome. Mm-hmm. Fassbender's good. It's just, you know, I don't know. I have yet to see something of his that has fully, like, where I'm like, whoa, like, fully sold me. But I mean, I think he's good. That's nothing, an indictment against him. Maybe I just haven't seen him in the right role. But then again, I tend to love actors who can, like, rock it even in the worst of movies. I mean, like, Lance Henriksen, for my money, he's one of the best actors ever. And I mean, Henriksen's had to do some real dogs, you know, but like, he's always great, though.
I would agree.
I'm sorry.
No, I agree with that. I mean, Lance Henriksen is great. I don't care. Pumpkinhead, that's a great horror movie, too. We didn't talk about Pumpkinhead. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Near Dark. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Millennium, the TV show.
Yes.
Millennium was good. Yes.
Frank Black. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make a Lance Henriksen podcast and forget everything else, man. I could do it.
Hell yeah. I'm down. Let's do this.
All right, John, we got one more. 1922, starring the second best Punisher.
Right. Wait, is he the second best Punisher?
Yeah. I mean, I think John Bernthal is better. Yeah.
All right. All right. So Thomas Jane is Wilf James, a simple man that believes that a man's worth is measured by his land and by his son. His wife, Arlette, is tired of country living and wants to live in the city, taking her son and selling off a big portion of the land they own because it was given to her by her family. And all doing all this would be leaving Wilf in the lurch. Wilf concocts his plan to get everything he wants through manipulation and murder and executes his plan to the fullest degree, and then everything just starts to go bad. Thomas Jane is a pleasure to watch in this. It's fun to watch him acting again. I feel like it's been so long since I've seen him do something good. Mm-hmm. This he is really great in. He completely disappears in the character. He makes it his own, and you can't find any other character that he's done before. And it's awesome. The cinematography is fantastic. The bleak look of the landscape, everything about it was great. My problem with this story is, well, this movie is the story, not to bury that lead or anything. And I don't know if it's my fault or not, because what I was getting into in this movie was a cool ghost revenge movie. And it turns into more of a guilt with mental illness story. It didn't engage with me. It didn't suck me in. And I found it to be more aggravating because I wanted to see something spookier, something better than that.
You wanted supernatural and it was psychological.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it's exactly what it is psychological, but they play the psychological in a supernatural kind of way. And it's aggravating. Just lean into it one way or the other. Don't try to do the middle of the road. And it just didn't do anything for me. So unfortunately, and I think I'm pretty alone on this, or from what I can tell from the group, a lot of people really enjoyed this movie. However, for me, if $10 for price of admission, 1922 gets 4.50.
So it's a little better than a Fassbender.
A little better. I mean, Thomas Jane's pretty phenomenal.
He is.
I actually prefer Thomas Jane over Fassbender. I gotta say, I think Fassbender's good, but Thomas Jane, I agree with you, John, so much that Thomas Jane should be used more.
Mm-hmm. He really should be.
Oh, he's tremendous. If anybody doubts us, watch anything he's done. But like his turn in Boogie Nights, even though that's like a smaller role, like he is so good in that role. Like he, you know, for me, he was always like one of the first people I thought of
mm-hmm.
when I think of that movie. Like Thomas Jane's, yeah, he's great. Mm.
Did you hear Mark Wahlberg once? He wants to say sorry to God for making Boogie Nights. I'm like, what? That was a movie that gave you any credibility whatsoever that you still have a career.
Oh, no kidding. Like, what? You're sorry to God that you were in an actual, like, well-made movie that was intelligent and great and contains your best acting ever? I think the guy that posted it made a comment of, like, he should be asking God to forgive him for Ted.
Yeah. That was...
That's dumb. It's dumb.
That was funny though. It is funny. It's funny.
Yeah, Mark.
I'm like, you're a guy who go look at his criminal history. I think there's other things you should be apologizing for, my friend. Not Boogie Nights. Yeah, I went there. I did.
No, I love it. No, because that's an excellent point. Yeah, you're not asking God for forgiveness for, you know, committing a hate crime. Yep. And that resulted in permanent blindness of your victim. That is actually less of a sin to Mark Wahlberg than being in a great movie that happens to be about the adult industry in the 1970s.
Yeah, but Heather, sex and drugs.
It's wrong.
It's wrong.
Hate crimes are cool. they're making a comeback. All right, John, what are the new releases coming out October 27th?
Up first, we got All I See Is You, which I mean, all right, it's about blindness, cute name. A blind woman in a relationship with her husband changes when she regains sight and discovers disturbing details about themselves. This stars Blake Lively, Jason Clarke, Anna O'Reilly, and Miguel Fernandez. Then, what everyone's waiting for this weekend, Jigsaw. Bodies are turning up around the city, each having met a unique, gruesome death. As the investigation proceeds, evidence points to a suspect, John Kramer, the man known as Jigsaw, who's been dead for 10 years, starring Matt Passmore, Tobin Bell, and Callum Keith Renee. Then we have Suburbicon. A home invasion rattles a family town, and it's a quiet family town nonetheless, starring Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, Oscar Isaac, and Jack Connelly. And then we have something that Aaron's looking forward to. Thank You for Your Service. Well, I mean, he's actually okay with that part. A group of U.S. soldiers returning from Iraq, they struggle to integrate back into family life and civilization while living with the memory of war that threatens to destroy them long after they've left the battlefield. Starring Haley Bennett, Miles Teller, mm-hmm. Aaron.
Mm-hmm. Miles Teller is here. Yay.
Yeah. Keisha Castle Hughes and Hey, Amy Schumer is joining the party too.
I'm not objecting to Amy Schumer, but Miles Teller. Yeah.
Yeah.
In case you don't know, Heather, right. I find Miles Teller to be an exceptionally average actor who Hollywood will not stop shoving down our throats, like giving him every opportunity he can to make it, and he never does, and he still keeps coming back, and I can't understand it for the life of me.
Yeah, but Aaron, that drummer movie.
Oh, the one that J.K. Simmons rocked, and he basically had to coast on his coattails? Yeah, I remember it. Whiplash, I remember. It's a good movie.
Oh, is that the name of it? Because I forgot it. It was kind of mild. Teller.
Oh. Oh, that was sweet.
Thanks for laughing at it. I was kind of, you know, I felt like a little worm and a big hook on that one.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was good. And yeah, J.K. Simmons rocks.
Don't you agree? He makes everybody better. He really does.
He's the ranch dressing of acting.
That's delicious.
Exactly.
Hey, Heather, of these four movies that we talked about briefly, what do you think you're going to see this weekend?
That's a good question. Probably, if I had to pick, I definitely don't want to see Jigsaw because I'm good on that. I don't know. I mean, I didn't think any of them sounded terrible. There's not really one of the four super gripping me. I got to be honest. Oh, God. I don't know. This is hard.
Think about it. You can weigh on it for a second. All right.
Yeah. Aaron, what do you think?
I am going to go with Jigsaw because, I mean, it's Halloween, so I want to see a Halloween-y movie, and I already saw Happy Death Day, so I'll see Jigsaw. I like the series. I love the first movie. The first movie, I think, is a legitimately great film, and then the rest of them are whatever they are. But they're fun. Like, it's not a check your brain at the door. It's literally, like, take your brain and throw it at the door. But I still like them. And I'm still trying to understand how they made four movies after the guy died, but now they got a fifth one. I'm really trying to figure out how this is going to work. So, but it does have Matt Passmore, who I really love the show Glades, and he was in Glades. So I'm excited. I'm interested to see how they plan on rebooting this thing because they really did a solid ending. Like the last film was legitimately, it ended well. It had a really interesting ending. Even if it was outlandish, it was interesting. I don't know how they're going to do this. And the concept of having him back boggles my mind. Like, he was dead in the third movie. Why the hell is he showing up in the eighth one? He's not Freddy Krueger, man. He was like a real person. He's dead. They cut his heart out. As far as the other movies, Don't Care About All I See Is You, Suburbicon, I think would be a great rental. I don't really know if I need to go to the theater to see it. The trailers are starting to grate on me when I see them. I've seen them so many times. I don't think it's as funny as I once did. And Thank You for Your Service. I was in the military. I respect the military. I feel like it's pandering. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm 100%. I have nothing to base it on other than the trailer. It's trying so hard to seem like it's pandering to military. I don't know if, I mean, you're putting a lot in the hands of Miles Teller, is what I'm saying. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. But I heard Only the Brave was good, and I haven't been to see that one yet. So maybe this one will be good too. Who knows? But it's not one that's top of my list.
For me, if I were to see any of these, it'd probably be Suburbicon because that's the only one that looks interesting and fun to me. And I would rather have interesting fun. But if I'm going to be totally honest, we got coming out this weekend on Netflix season 2 of Stranger Things. And I'm going to be watching that. Sorry, guys. That's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be camped out on my sofa. I'm going to probably build a little sofa fort and watch some Stranger Things season 2.
Okay. Yeah. That's the correct answer, I think. Heather, did you arrive at anything yet, or are you still pondering?
Well, really, I'll give you the real answer,
okay.
Which is basically this weekend I'll be watching, or actually rewatching in this case because I've seen it before, a film called Who Killed Teddy Bear, which is a really amazing, very underrated mid-60s sort of thriller. Film starring Sal Mineo and Juliet Prowse. And it's got lots of, there's also some really great shots of New York that, you know, has been long gone. You even see bits of like 42nd Street and some of the sleazier shots, which to see that in a 1964 film is pretty amazing. But I'm going to be talking, I'm actually recording with Mike on the projection booth Sunday. We're going to be talking about that. So I'll be rewatching it to kind of refresh my mind for that episode.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah.
And I'll probably also watch, like, I have a Halloween special from the Uncle Floyd show, which was this really great show. I didn't get to see it when it was on because it was in more like the New York, New Jersey area. Mm-hmm. But a friend of mine sent it to me years ago, and it's got like Zachary on it, like the great, one of the greatest horror hosts ever. And Thor, the Canadian heavy metal rock god, blows up a water bottle. David Johansen's in it, the Ramones. So be watching that to get my, to get the Halloween good vibes going.
You just took the long way to say none of this shit. I don't want to see anything.
I'm sorry. I won't say I'll never see those. That, there you go.
Let's go to, let's see where this goes. Heather, every once in a while we do this where a host tosses out a subject, a title, name, phrase, whatever you want in film and television. And we just see where the discussion takes us. Something you want to talk about in entertainment. So let's see where this goes.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm very excited about this, and I have a name I'm going to throw out.
Okay.
And kind of continue with how much I think we love character actors, because they really give us the goods in ways that main quote-unquote stars don't always.
Okay.
And that name is Anthony James. And first of all, are you guys familiar with the name Anthony James?
No.
No, not at all.
Okay. Anthony James first of all, he's also a poet, a great painter, writer, but he was the chauffeur in Burnt Offerings, which would be a great movie for the Halloween season with Karen Black and Oliver Reed and Betty Davis. He was in The Heat of the Night. There's a great scene with him. Yeah, he's the guy in the diner dancing around Defal Al on the prowl.
Okay.
Like, hell yes.
Yes. Now I know who you're a little bit know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. He also has a hilarious fight scene with Leslie Nielsen in the first Naked Gun movie. Also, he was a great villain in The Teacher, which was an exploitation film with Jay North, you know, who's best known for being Dennis the Menace. I say villain, I mean, the whole movie, I'm like, man, this guy's awesome. Forget Jay North. You know, honey, go with the real man. Go with Anthony James. And also, he even was in the music video for Poison's Fallen Angel.
What?
Yes. Yes. He plays this sleazy agent and he's so fabulous in it. Is it a Poison video? Oh my God.
That's when you made it. That's when you know you made it in the '80s, kids. When you're in a Poison video, you're like, yep, that was all I needed. He was an Unforgiven as Skinny Dubois. Okay.
Oh, see? Yeah. I love it that I mentioned Poison before Unforgiven. Thank you, Aaron.
It looks like the time I ran into him the first time I ran into him would have been Return to Witch Mountain. That's the first time I would have run into him.
So what made you want to bring him up? Why was he so special to you? Just an actor that you wish would have gotten more recognition along the way, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the guy has, to me, one of the best faces. Like, I love an actor with a really great, interesting face. But also, he just brings this, like, quality. Like, as soon as he's on the screen, it's like, God damn, that man, yes. Like, he doesn't have to do anything. He just stand there and just look at the camera. And there's, like, just something, you know, like, you're drawn to him. There's just, he's got that special quality that I think all truly great actors have, that sort of magnetism. And yeah, he should have been used, I think, a heck of a lot more than he was. And he's epic. I love it. I mean, I've watched that Poison video more times than I can count. And I don't like that Poison song. Like, I don't mind talk dirty to me, but yeah, Fallen Angel, especially because like the whole video is this girl runs off, the classic beautiful blonde from the Midwest, runs to the big city, and there's Anthony James, and we're supposed to think he's the bad guy. But I'm like, whatever, honey, you're getting to be with Anthony James. Like, he's amazing. And the good ending, quote unquote, is that she leaves the video on the back of Bret Michaels' motorcycle. Like, please, listen, Bret Michaels is going to do things to her that she's never going to forget, and not in a good way. Like, she's going to be all crying in the back of a bus going on her way to Iowa, being like, I got my heart broken by the lead singer Poison. Like, she didn't even aim for, like, a better quality band, like Helix or even Faster Pussycat. Like, you settled for Poison, honey. You didn't even go for CeCe DeVille, which is the glam band member you clearly want to bang for Poison. Because he's CeCe DeVille, and he's a great guitarist.
That was the most entertaining tangent I've heard in a long time.
It's the truth.
I think you lost John. He's over there in the, laughing like a hyena in the corner.
I mean, this is just, I'm just saying, Anthony James is the man, and everybody should love him like I do, because he's worthy of our love. He's great.
Well, I don't know him very well, but I'm kind of curious. That brings up the concept, I guess. Is there somebody like that for you, John? Like somebody like her Anthony James? Is there an Anthony James for you? Just an unsung hero of acting?
Well, I think we touched on him when we got to Thomas Jane. I think Thomas Jane's an unsung hero of acting. He should definitely have been used a lot more than he ever has been. And I always enjoy seeing him on the screen. Unfortunately, I did see him. He did a movie with Bruce Willis, which is like nobody wants to do that anymore.
That's true. That's so true. That scares me how true that is. Yeah, that is quite true. Mine would probably be Michael Madsen. I think he gets so much grief because he does take every part that ever comes up. I mean, I don't think he says no to anything. I mean, we could call him today, and I think he would take a part in our student film. I just think the guy doesn't say no. But there has always been something about him that, even though he plays the same guy in every movie, he is the coolest guy in that movie. Like, there's just something about him. I don't know what it is, but it's a magnetism that you can't bottle, and he has it. And every time I see him in anything, I'm just like, I just want to hang out with that dude. Just hang out with him. He did a TV show, and I talk about it every once in a while. It's called Vengeance Unlimited. He did that in the 90s, maybe, where he played a rich man going by the name of Mr. Chapel, and people would come to him and he would go to them, I'm sorry, and offer them the option that he could right a wrong. So somebody got away with murder in their family or something, he would set them up for something else. Like, he would basically set them up. This is on primetime network television. And they would either have to pay him $1 million or owe him a favor, and he would use the favors to help someone else down the road. And it was a really cool, really dark show that, of course, was destined to get canceled because it was network TV and it was like before anti-heroes were cool. And even that, even though, I mean, he's playing a really, really dark guy, and if you had anybody else do it, I think it wouldn't have worked at all. And he's doing it, and you thought he was a good, fun guy, and he's doing really, like, he's framing people for murder. And and there is not a moment that I watch a show and I thought he was the bad guy. Not one moment, because he's that cool. He's one of those actors, and I love him and everything he does. And his name pops up, I get excited. He's my Anthony James.
He's so good. I love, well, those are both awesome picks. I mean, you guys already know how much I love Thomas Jane. Michael Madsen, he is like super, super cool. And he, to me, is almost like, he has that quality that guys like Steve McQueen and Lee Marvin and, you know, just the real sort of like, and those are kind of like a lost breed, I think, you know, because even the guys that they kind of have as action stars now, a lot of them to me are almost too metro or, you know what I mean? Like, they don't really have that like badass, super masculine, cool, smooth quality that guys, you know, like Michael Madsen has. Like and Madsen's still with this. I mean, I think, again, Hollywood kind of dropped the ball because, you know, put him. If they had a big budget, like, action film that came out right now starring Michael Madsen, I would watch it like that.
Yeah, just, I would too. Yeah, absolutely.
As opposed to like Matt Damon. Sorry. I mean, I know the Bourne Identity is supposed to be really good, but, and I don't think Damon's a bad actor, but I mean, you know, he looks like an older guy that used to be a frat boy. He doesn't look like somebody who could, like, you know, pull off some badass action and crime and look cool and smoke a cigarette, drink whiskey, and just, you know,
I'm going to leap to Damon's defense. He does it really well. He really actually, he does it very well. So Jason Bourne.
I think so too.
Yeah, that's something different, but I mean, who would you rather see in an action film now? Let me ask you guys this. Would you rather see Matt Damon, or would you rather see Michael Madsen?
Okay.
Matt Damon.
What?
I'm sorry, I can't agree with you on Michael Madsen. I mean, a Species, he was great in Species, okay, but he was also the same guy in...
Hang on. How do I turn your mic off here? Where do I do that? Like, here's the thing about Michael Madsen. I remember I took my daughter to see Free Willy, and Michael Madsen plays the kid's father in Free Willy, right? Which shocked me, because I'm like, this guy cut an ear off, and he's like around like animal life. That's not right. And so I'm watching it, and you know, for most of the movie, he's like a really sweet dad and everything else. And then there's like one moment in Free Willy. There's one moment where he just gives, where he stops acting, and he actually gives a Michael Madsen kind of look. And I'm like, that whale's going to get shot in the face right then. Shot in the face.
No.
Yeah.
Not Willy.
Not Willy. This movie's going to turn. It's not a family film. And yeah. So Michael Madsen, he's just got, man, if he turns that look on, I'm sorry. He's far cooler than Matt Damon.
Oh, my God. I got something to pitch to you guys real quick.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Imagine a high action thriller about a set of brothers, and one, you know, both used to be criminals. One's reformed, and the other one has gone even further into the K-hole of crime and criminality. And the reformed brother is Michael Madsen. The bad seed brother is Tom Sizemore.
Oh my God.
Oh, sign me up.
What are you doing?
Boom.
I would watch that.
There's some dead hookers on that movie set.
There you go. And they're all in Sizemore's trailer. Right. Allegedly. We're covered.
That guy, boy, he's got some demons, huh?
Oh man.
He spent all that relic money on hookers and blow. Good for you.
Oh my God. His demons have demons. That is, I hope he's doing better. But yeah, but I mean, good actor. And I always thought those two, like, together in a film, I just think that'd be really interesting.
That would be intense.
That'd be a lot of testosterone.
I don't think I have enough testosterone to even go to that movie.
And a lot of head bobbing. Think of all the head bobbing, like the the weight of those noggins bouncing back and forth.
Well, yeah, you know Madsen, that's how he walks. He just throws his head in a direction and just follows it.
That's true.
Oh, and get this. I just thought of something else. There's like a group of German mafia that Madsen has to deal with to help try and track down his bad seed brother. And they're all played by the band Rammstein. I just want to see this.
You have some interesting theories. I will tell you that. Interesting
theory. Wait, do you want them played by Rammstein when they're on stage? Like that persona of Rammstein, or their offstage persona?
Offstage, because even like the smaller frame guys of Rammstein, I still feel like are capable of mucho ass kickery. And I don't know. This is just my vision, guys.
I like it. All it's missing is a box of flies. If you could work that in.
John and I are going to write this screenplay together. And
that's right.
He's going to have the, if you're like, that's a box of flies. I see.
Mm-hmm. Good one. All right. That's great. I like where this went. It went a lot of different, mostly it went to cool supporting actor places. So let's talk about some recent film or TV recommendations. Anything we haven't talked about already. Heather, is there anything you want to talk about, like recent movies you've seen that you hope people will check out?
Yeah, actually, there's two I want to talk about. Now, granted, recent for me are films that are at least a few years old. I haven't seen anything super, super new release just yet. Mm-hmm. But one I saw on Netflix was the documentary on professional wrestler Jake the Snake Roberts. Called The Resurrection of Jake Roberts. And it's really, really good. I mean, it's, I thought it was done very respectfully. I actually grew up around a lot of professional wrestling in the 80s because my family, my mother in particular, was a super fan. And I got to go to live matches, the whole nine yards. And I didn't think about that part of my life for a long time. And recently I've been kind of revisiting it. And I was thinking about how much I love Jake Roberts as a wrestler. And it's really good. It's, you know, it's uplifting without being too hokey, you know, mm-hmm. but it's honest and gritty without being like, you're going to be swinging from the rafters or anything, you know,
that sounds interesting.
After watching it. So it's really good. And the other one is a film I've actually seen, but I revisited going back to Romero, was The Crazies. And that was actually for, is it okay if I do a little plug?
Yeah. Here? Is it the new or the original?
It's the original.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
The original, because I was blessed enough to get offered to do the liner notes for Arrow in the UK are doing a box set of George Romero's early films. And the set's called Between Night and Dawn. Mm-hmm. And includes all of his early films that are basically that were made between Night of the Living Dead and Martin. which I wish they could have gotten the rights to Martin, because Martin is one of my favorite films of all time, period.
Great,
and it's my favorite
movie.
Romero.
Great
but
movie.
The Crazies is so good, and it was a pleasure getting to write about it. And I haven't seen the remake, but the original, I mean, that's the thing. I love, you know, the power of a guy like Romero is, you know, you can watch a film that was this low budget, early 70s film, but it has all the power. It still has all the potency. And in some ways, there's aspects of it that I think are even more pertinent now than perhaps were when it was originally made. Like, I think it's just a really powerful movie.
That's a great movie. Martin and Crazies are both great movies. And the remake is actually not too bad. It had Timothy Olyphant in it.
Oh, I like him. He's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was really good. And it was surprising how well it was done, because I have poor a lot of remakes, because I usually miss what made the first one magical to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did it their own way, and they did a pretty good job of it. So it's worth checking out if you can handle a remake.
Well, very cool. I may give it a chance.
All right, what about you, John? Anything else you want to mention?
No, I've been just getting caught up on Stranger Things. Just rewatching it, kind of like letting it sit in the room. I started watching The Good Place, and I'm really loving that show. It really fills that place in my heart that needs some happy, jokey kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and it does a really good job of it. Mindhunters, I'm halfway through. Still really great idea to sit down and watch that show. It's more of a period piece than anything else so far. And that's about it.
All right. Well, I've got three. So settle in, kids. I watched the Spielberg documentary on HBO. And, you know, he is like the king of popular culture in terms of entertainment. And it was an interesting documentary. I do wish they would have structured the documentary more chronologically, because I feel like they bounce around timelines a little too much, when they could have just followed the story of his career in order, and I think it would have made more sense for viewers. Besides that, it's a great documentary. It's very nostalgic. I mean, there's a lot of teary-eyed moments, because there's a lot of like nostalgia. It's kind of like watching Stranger Things. It takes me back to that era that I grew up, and I started loving the concept of movies and making movies, and I made my own in my own backyard, and hearing his story, and he did the same thing. And you get a little bit of insight into his personal life with his family. Kate Capshaw is not part of it. He is still married to Kate Capshaw, but he talks about her quite a bit, but she's not actually part of the documentary, which I found a little odd. But outside of that, great documentary. I think if you're a Spielberg fan or a fan of his movies, you will enjoy it. And it's on HBO, and it's just called Spielberg. The other one, speaking of J.K. Simmons, Heather, is there's a movie called The Bachelors, which I interviewed the director, Kurt Volker. It's on the feed, and it's on the website. You can check it out. And it's a movie that follows, well, it stars J.K. Simmons and Josh Wiggins as a father and son who are dealing with the loss of their wife and mom, respectively. And the movie opens with J.K. Simmons saying, we got to move. I can't be here anymore. So they move across the country to California and to kind of escape the ghosts of that. And while Josh Wiggins' character, Wes, is trying to just, you know, start a new life, make new friends, and he meets a new girl and everything else, Dad really struggles with trying to move on. Julie Delpy's in it, and she is a French teacher who's really smitten with J.K. Simmons' character, Bill. And she obviously is into him, but he's trying, but he really, really struggles. And I found it to be a very sweet and charming film. J.K. Simmons is just a guy that can wear a lot on his sleeve. He carries a lot in his eyes, and I think the movie does wonders with that. It's a very simple, sweet movie. It's not trying to be much more than it is. And it does have a nice little Oz reunion, because I don't want to spoil it, but there is a little bit of an Oz reunion in this movie. So if you're an Oz fan, you're going to like that part of it. It's called The Bachelors. Lastly, you know, usually every season we've done kind of after the credits Walking Dead discussion, but most of my co-hosts have dropped off of Walking Dead. So
what show is that again?
Exactly. So we don't have that anymore. It's just me that watches it now. Everybody else stopped watching it. Brian left the show. John said, I'm done after the horrible events of last season. And I think Scott stopped like a season and a half ago. So I will tell you, I still kind of enjoy it. They're toying with time jumps now, which is kind of super annoying, because that's a very artistic choice that you better know how to do. And I'm not convinced they know how to do it yet, but I'm going to give them time. I did enjoy the episode, though, more than last year's premiere. So I'm still on board, but I've got 1 foot thinking about jumping at all times. So just keep the train moving, Walking Dead, and I'll still be there. But I'm really close to jumping right off. All right. That's all I got. Any of those appeal to you? Any of you? None of you?
When? What, about Walking Dead?
No. I think we've got that. So basically, I'm the only one still watching the show. All right.
Aw, sorry, Aaron.
Okay. Damn it. At this point, I feel like it's one of those things where I just want to see how it end, how it'll end, but I don't think it'll ever end. I'm convinced it's just never going to end.
Yeah, it's not going to. It's still it's going to be there, and then that kid Carl is going to end up, like, I don't know. Who knows what he's going to do?
He's going to be 46.
I can't do it.
Yeah, I can't either. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this show. So make sure you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Find other episodes, reviews, and other info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And we're on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the hoe and the go with our Apple or Android apps. We're on Spotify. Subscribe on or review an Apple Podcast, Stitcher, your podcast app of choice. And once again, thank you guys for listening. And go to the Facebook group. Join the Facebook group. A lot of conversation goes on there. Heather, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my God. Thank you both so much for having me. This was a blast.
I'm glad you had fun.
It's been awesome having you. It's not often somebody shuts me up. You did a good job.
Oh, well, that wasn't trying to shut you up.
No, oh, sure. She says at the end of the show.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Where can people find you one more time?
Well, my website is mondoheather.com. You can also find me on Twitter as Mondo Heather, as well as Instagram. I'm also on Facebook as Heather Drain. And yeah, so those are main ways to find me. And thank you guys. And listen to all of this show. These guys are great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, if they got this far, I'm hoping they like it overall. So
they better. I'm not saying we will haunt you listeners if you don't like it, but one of us may know voodoo. So you can take your guess at which one of us. It might not be me. Could be John, could be Aaron. Maybe all three of us. You don't know.
We'll stick some musical bikers on you. That's what we'll do.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Do they in your vision, do they rev their motorcycles to musical cues? Like that?
That was not in my original vision, but I'm not opposed to it. I will say that. There's going to be a lot of surf music too, but like cool surf music, not like Beach Boys, but like The Ventures or, you know, The Bomboras, something like that. And I don't know, maybe a member of Grim Reaper, the band, maybe not. I don't know.
No, CeCe DeVille. Bring CeCe DeVille into this. I mean, you already brought
him. Oh my God. Yes. As a carny. Yes.
As a carny.
All right. Johnny, where can people find you?
You can always find me on cool places like the Instagrams. I'm rjohn.draws. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/rjohndraws. I do a bunch of different things. I have a YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/brom8378 at the moment. It'll change at some point. You can see me draw. You can see me fly. You can see me do pictures of different stuff. I'm there. And hi. Hey, how you doing?
All right. Well, you can find me here at thehollywoodoutsider.com. I also do a podcast called Remake This Movie Right, where we take an original remake, figure out what still works and what doesn't, and we try to make a modern remake. And that's always capped off with a parody movie trailer. So you can check that out. Remake This Movie Right, as well as, God, what else, man? The Blacklist Exposed, if you watch that. And also, you can go to the projection booth. Heather and I did 2 episodes, Dr. Detroit. What was the other one? It was a weird one. I can't remember.
It was Some Call It Loving.
Some Call It Loving, yes. That was a weird-ass movie. But Dr.
That was brilliant.
It was brilliantly weird. But Dr. Detroit is on there, too, and that was a great. It's a great podcast overall if you really love the history of film and want to dive into it. A lot of good interviews and stuff. Okay, so thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. And remember, the next time you go to the theater, buy popcorn.